Our Ask the Experts weekend continues with a conversation. To ask a question, give us a call at 340-1045. Here are your hosts, Jay Gray and Dr. Ali Kezrayan.
Good evening, Jacksonville, and happy Saturday. I'm Danielle Lee, and welcome to The Conversation with Dr. Ali Kezrayan. You too can join the conversation. Just give us a call at 340-1045. We have a full house today and even somebody on the line. So, Dr. Lee, I'm just going to toss it over to you.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Welcome to the conversation. We do have a full house today talking about a very important and fortunately more often discussed topic than even as recently as years past. Today we're going to talk about mental illness as we move forward to a wonderful event happening next Saturday that we'll discuss today. In studio, we have a few guests who I'm honored to have here. One is Janine Hoff, who I had the good fortune of meeting and talking to after a wonderful presentation at the TEDx meeting here in Jacksonville, Florida a few months ago. And she was talking about mental illness and her amazing organization called Where is the Sunshine? And we'll talk about why she started that organization. And sorry, I almost fell off the table here while sitting, which is an impressive thing to do. But I almost accomplished it. But we're going to talk about that and the reasons why her organization aims to raise awareness for mental health through education, through advocacy, and raising the emphasis on the importance of early intervention and peer support. For both the people dealing with the struggles of mental health and also the family and the people that care for them and our community at large. And fortunately, I think we are moving in times where our communities and our nation and the world is becoming more accepting of the possibility of mental illness being an actual illness as opposed to a stigmated issue that people don't need to talk about and keep hidden. So I'm very excited to have Janine on the show. Janine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Also in studio is Denise Marzullo, who is the Executive Director of Mental Health America here in Northeast Florida with a long and wide or longstanding and a wide breadth of experience as a mental health counselor, as well as I saw that you had a business degree as well, which I think would probably help in terms of dealing with the advocacy and the running of organizations aimed at raising awareness and obviously, you want to raise funds for research and things of that nature as well through the breadth of things that can be done. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And on the line, our dear friend to the conversation and myself, Dr. Michael Delahunt, who is a psychiatrist focusing on adolescent behavioral health at Wolfson's Children's Hospital and the Nemours Clinics. Dr. Delahunt, thank you for joining us. I spoke to him a second ago. I know he's on
he's
call.
He's somewhere there.
He's on call this weekend, so he may have been taking a call.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, there he is.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So, Janine, to start, TEDx talk was fantastic. It's amazing. Anyone can go on the TEDx Jacks website, on your website, Where is the Sunshine, and look at it. It's about TED Talks are basically 15 minutes where people take a very broad topic and tell personalized stories of how this is important. And they're not only informative, but they're profoundly entertaining. And I think the combination of two engages our community and our people in stories that open our eyes to a perspective on issues. Here, mental health, I think, is a field of medicine that people's individual stories have such power in terms of opening your eyes to the importance of this issue, but also opening the eyes of those dealing with this issue that they are not alone. Mm-hmm. And I think that is key.
Yes, it's true. You know, with mental illness, some people just don't seek treatment. They think, oh, I can get over it on my own, or I can be fine, or I just try not to think about it. If you broke your leg, you'd go to the hospital, you'd get your leg fixed. If you were diagnosed with cancer, you'd go to the doctor, you'd get chemo, you'd get radiation, you'd do whatever kind of treatment you could to survive. With mental illness, it's a little different. With the stigma of it, people tend to try and avoid it or think, oh, I'll get past it in a few days. And sometimes they do, but many times they don't. And so if it's not treated early, it can get worse and a person can go into crisis mode.
So let me ask you, how did you get involved in starting this organization, and how did you get involved in the world of mental illness?
It's kind of funny. I actually have a degree in music, so I did not do any training in mental health until I got involved in doing this. And it was basically based on my own experience in Jacksonville. I began to suffer from severe depression and anxiety to the point where I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't do anything. It was hard for me to take care of my children, to, you know, be a wife and be a mother. And I was working full time. I was working, you know, between 50 and 70 hours a week in a very stressful position. And so I stopped working, and it all just kind of collapsed on me, my world. And I looked for help, and there was professional help. I was seeing a psychiatrist, I was seeing a psychologist, but I kind of wanted someone to connect with on my level. So, you know, a friend, someone to understand. And I had, my friends were really supportive and really, they tried to understand, but they just didn't get it. And my husband, too, he was the most supportive husband as could possibly be, but it was hard for him to understand what I was going through. And so I decided, after looking and not finding something, you know, out there like this, that I was going to create my own organization to connect individuals across the city with other organizations, with myself, to get them peer support, because peer support, I think, is critical. It's like the last missing piece in the puzzle.
So basically, the idea of the support group amplified in a way that you can not only be an advocate for the disease process, but if someone needs help, they can reach out and talk to someone that has dealt with this issue or is currently dealing with an issue that may not seem that simple or that easy to answer when you're getting the information from someone who hasn't gone through it themselves.
Well, I find that the people I come across, I've spoken to parents who have depressed teenagers, their kids are struggling. They come to me and they're just looking for advice, an ear, a shoulder to lean on, and that's what we're here to do. We're there to be their support system, to say, you know, it's okay to go out there and find a doctor, find a psychiatrist, find a psychologist or a social worker, and we'll be with you. We'll be, you know, your foundation, if you will, and help them go and get seek the treatment that they need, for whether it's for themselves or a family member or a friend. And it's done a lot of wonders for people. I've encountered so many people across Jacksonville in just the past year who I thought were very successful, wonderful, everyday people who have reached out to me saying, I've been struggling with depression for the last few months. I've been struggling with anxiety, and I would have never guessed. And that's very surprising because it's hidden very well by most people.
So, Dr. Delahunt, Janine, thank you for sharing that. Dr. Delahunt, one question I had, you know, for me looking at the world of mental health and mental illness, it seems like some of the most difficult things for people to do when they're dealing with a mental health issue is acknowledging, accepting, and even identifying that that may be going on, and then having the bravery to ask and reach out for help. As a psychiatrist, what do you notice to be the process of something like Janine went through, where initially you have to identify and realize that something may be going on that's beyond just feeling anxious or feeling sad, where you may need help, and then how to leap over that hurdle of actually reaching the hand out and getting help from friends, family, primary care physicians, and ultimately a psychiatrist or a psychologist?
Well, first of all, I have the advantage of actually, in my practice, when I'm actually meeting with somebody, they've already made that step. So we start from the point of like, well, thank you for coming in. Let's address the concerns that brought you here. But as Ms. Hoff had indicated, really that acknowledging that is really the most difficult step that people take, where all of us experience anxiety, depression, anger, frustration on a regular basis. And our experience is always that we tend to get over it relatively quickly. But when it tends to persist and actually starts to impact our day-to-day lives and how we interact with others and how we're able to perform our jobs or whatever other responsibilities we may have, and it persists and becomes increasingly more painful I think it's the pain and suffering that we experience that will encourage us to start to reach out. Unfortunately, I think the most common experience for people is that it's not until it really hits a crisis for them in some way that they have to acknowledge that they need to get help. And sometimes once we acknowledge that we need to get help, then we can pursue that. And a lot of people will reach out to their primary care physician as the first stop because they're a trusted, familiar person that's in the medical field that they feel maybe help us get to who we need to get to, whether it be a therapist or a psychiatrist. And in fact, the primary care physicians often can initiate treatment as well as make a good referral.
I mean, it's interesting just for our audience and everyone here, some of the statistics for mental health illness are staggering. 1 out of 5 adults in the United States experiences a mental illness in a given year. That's 18.5% of our population and up to 43.8 million Americans. That's not an insignificant number. 1 out of 25 adults in the United States experiences a serious and severe mental illness, like Dr. Delahunt was mentioning, in a given year that substantially interferes or limits one or more of the major life activities that they take on from a day-to-day basis. Another thing, like Janine was mentioning, in terms of the importance of early intervention and a big focus of her group to try to allow a place for people to reach out for discussions of why that's important. 50% of all cases of mental illness begin by the age of 14 and 75 by the age of 24. Sometimes the time frame of something and the early signs or symptoms that are presenting themselves, that time to actual early intervention or the discussions with a therapist, a psychiatrist, a psychologist can last up to a decade. You know, sometimes these take a long, these moves from identification to therapy can be far long. And the reason this is important, suicide is the 10th leading cause of mortality in the United States. In the youth and teenagers, young Americans, 10 to 24, it has now moved up to the 2nd leading cause of death in the United States. And I argue if I question if early intervention is begun or these disorders are identified a little bit earlier, can we potentially impact and change the course of those statistics, which are daunting?
All right, and we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with more of the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. And we are back with the conversation. We actually have a little bit longer than what we normally have, about 8 minutes. So we're doing good on time so far.
So I'm not going to listen to the time cues given. I'm just going to keep talking because it seems like when we do listen, we have a lot of extra time.
Yeah.
I guess it's probably a good thing, I guess. Thank you for joining us on the conversation today. Today we're talking about mental health and mental illness. And in studio, we have the founder of Where is the Sunshine, which is a fantastic organization that is geared towards education, advocacy, and really trying to give people who are dealing with mental health issues and the people that care for them and care about them a place to go for peer advocacy, for peer support, and to know that there's a place where you're not alone and people who have gone through similar things can help guide you and help be there for you during the time where you may actually feel that you're alone. One thing I want to mention before we talk to Denise, who is the executive director of Mental Health America here in Northeast Florida, who similarly works hard to raise mental awareness, is that if you are having a difficult time and you feel a need to talk to someone at a time where you may be having thoughts that are either suicidal or concerning, always reach out. There's a place to go, 1-800-273-TALK. Or 1-800-273-8255 is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So if you need to talk to someone and you feel like there's no one else to talk to, that's an amazing place to reach out. You can call 211. In Jacksonville, you can call 904-632-0600. But again, 1-800-273-TALK, an important number to have if you're having any thoughts that may be dangerous, such as suicide. Like we talked about, it's the 10th leading cause of death here in the United States. And in youth between 10 to 24, it's now moved into the 2nd leading cause, replacing homicides. And number one is accidents from that. So, Denise, how did you get involved in this wonderful and so important line of work?
I am actually a licensed mental health counselor. I kind of knew my whole life that that's what I wanted to do. So I was one of the fortunate few that kind of went to college, went straight to grad school, and have been in Jacksonville since I graduated from UNF with my degree in counseling psychology. And I've worked in community health for almost community mental health for almost 20 years. And I've seen a lot of the barriers to people getting the treatment that they need. Along with the stigma comes the trouble accessing services, capacity of services. There's a significant wait list to get services that you need. And in Florida, Florida is 50th in mental health funding. We are at the bottom when it comes to funding for mental health treatment. And that in itself creates a lot of barriers for people to get the help that they need. And like Dr. Delahunt mentioned, oftentimes people do not get the help until they're in a crisis situation. And that is the most expensive, most restrictive level of care, and certainly not where we want people to start accessing treatment.
So Dr. Delahunt, when should people try to access care? And when should they reach out to someone for help? And who should be the person that someone is dealing with an issue that they are on the fence about whether or not they need help regarding a mental health issue? How do they do that?
Well, it's complicated. It kind of depends on what it is.
We try to tackle the tough issues here on the conversation.
So it kind of depends on what the issue is, obviously. Not only is there anxiety and depression, but there's also substance abuse, learning disabilities, autism spectrum disorder. When you include any mental health problem, it really is a large proportion of people who have some kind of mental health condition that would warrant them to seek help. Ideally, what they would do is reach out to a therapist, to have somebody that they can talk to who's a professional, who's able to assess and evaluate the issues that they are having problems with. And if there is a need, perhaps the therapist could refer them to a psychiatrist to help possibly with some medications to augment the therapy that they're receiving.
And again, most studies that look at mental health illness talk about the combination of various different therapies far outweighs a single therapy. So if you're undergoing therapy or psychotherapy with a counselor, a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, that can sometimes be augmented by medication, sometimes with group therapy, sometimes with very specific therapies like cognitive behavioral therapies, behavior modification. So this multidisciplinary approach to dealing with mental health has been found to be more successful than either one alone. And talking to people who have expertise in dealing with mental illnesses can allow us and all of us and the people who are dealing with these issues to be able to get all the help. Janine, what from you? Sorry, I seemed to startle you. What for you made you think that you may need to get help for something that may be concerning with regarding your mental health?
It took a while. It took several months. I remember going to lunch with a friend and she said, I think you need to see someone. And I want to say deep down inside, I knew she was right. But it was months. It was a long period of time. And so I just thought, oh, I'd get over it. Oh, I'll just, you know, I had a bad day. I had a bad day at work. I had a bad day. My kids were not cooperating. You always make excuses for it because it is hard and it's expensive. And it's challenging to even get an appointment. Once I decided to try and get an appointment, it was, oh, we can't see you for 6 weeks. We can't get you in for 8 weeks. There's such a shortage of professionals out there. They're booked, they're, you know, overworked.
Sure.
And so it was really hard, but I would say it was a good 3 to 6 months before.
Let me ask you, how did you feel when your friend told you that? Your initial thought.
It was shocking, but she was absolutely correct.
Were you relieved or were you offended?
No, I wasn't offended because I knew that as a friend, for her to say that to me, she must have really noticed a change. And that's where we talk about the early intervention, is with that. If you notice a change in someone, that they stop wanting to do stuff that they normally do, they're no longer engaged in things that they enjoy, they're not going out, you know, stuff that they normally do, everyday stuff that they like. And she noticed that change in me, and it was her saying that to me, and I said, okay, you know, you are right. You're not wrong. I think it's, I was very appreciative. And throughout my struggle, she remained very supportive, which was really good. But she couldn't connect in that a level of connection. But, and so when we talk about early intervention, it's really noticing the changes in someone that you love, someone you care about, a friend, a relative, and approaching them in a non-judgmental way and listening to what they have to say and offering support and maybe offering some suggestions, like, you know, even basic things like, are you eating properly? Are you getting some exercise? You know, self-care.
So what would you tell someone who's listening now that may be concerned that they have an issue that they may need to seek help, but they don't know how to do it, or someone has someone they care about that they worry may be dealing with a mental health issue? What would you tell them?
Well, if it was someone on behalf of a loved one, I would say approach them. You have to listen non-judgmentally. You have to assess, as we say in mental health first aid, you have to assess them for immediate risk of suicide or harm. Because if you feel that they're in danger, then the best step is to call 911 or approach them and say, I'm concerned that you might be at risk for harming yourself. But once you get past that, then offer, you know, an ear and say, I'm here to support you. If you want me to come to a doctor with you, I'm happy to do that. If you want me to just be with you, or just know that I'm here to support
you. And what would you say to the person receiving that information?
I would say there's no shame, no embarrassment. I was embarrassed. I felt shame. I felt I couldn't tell a soul that I was going through any of this, and it made it that much worse. After I shared my story with friends and the community and essentially the world at this point, I felt free and I felt so much better. I felt that I was actually helping others and changing people's lives and encouraging people, and that there is no shame. If you have cancer, you don't have shame. If you have heart disease or diabetes, those are illnesses too. You don't have shame. And it's the same with mental illness.
And it's time for another break. We're going to grab an update from Fox News. Get your local forecast for the weekend. We'll be right back with the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV.
Our Ask the Experts weekend continues with a conversation. To ask a question, give us a call at 340-1045. Here are your hosts, Jay Gray and Dr. Ali Kezrayan.
All right, and we are back with more of the conversation. I'm Danielle Lee here with Dr. Ali Kezrayan. And before the break, we were talking about a number of different things involving mental illness, definitely a topic that means a lot to me. So I'm definitely going to hand it back over to you guys.
Well, Danielle, tell us why it means so much to you.
I've struggled with, I would say, some sort of depression when I experienced death in the family when I was really young, 12 years old. And I actually didn't know what was happening. It was a really traumatic experience for me. And I just remember being in class one day. I had went to the library. I was in seventh grade. And I just picked out a self-help book. And I was sitting in my life science class, and I'm reading, and I was like, I think there's something wrong with me. And I go up to my teacher, and I was like, I think I need to see a guidance counselor. He's like, what's going on? And I just had a breakdown in the hallway. And that's when I actually saw a guidance counselor for the first time. And then for a while, I was fine. Then some other things happened in college. And I've been seeing a therapist on college from my freshman year to my senior year. And a lot of my friends and even like some very close loved ones of mine deal with bipolar and anxiety and other mental illnesses. And I don't quite understand, so I try to understand. A very special person in my life has bipolar. And so I'm trying to understand that. And it's really hard to understand when you don't have a lot of experience in the area. And then you're trying to figure out, how can I learn more and help, but from the outsider, not, you know, being a family member, not having any kind of experience at all. And that's stressful within itself because you're trying to be there for that person. And it's like, am I helping or am I hurting? Do I just sit here and wait? So it's definitely something that means a lot to me because I feel like you could never stop learning with this topic.
So you know, that is brave. Thank you for sharing.
Problem.
I mean, that's a profoundly brave thing. So Denise, when you hear that story or meet someone with a similar story of confusion, wonder, and again, I hope we are moving in a time where not knowing that it's okay to ask is an issue. I mean, for Danielle, that's an incredibly brave thing to ask and to continue to be okay with that discussion in such a public forum is amazing. So what do you say to that?
I say that she's definitely very insightful and has been clearly since the age of 12 with her feelings. And a lot of people are not that insightful and advanced and forward thinking with their own feelings and to have... We all have loved ones, family members, friends, and coworkers that struggle with a mental illness. And so the fact that she is trying to learn more, to be more supportive to her loved ones is really important. And I think that's the advances that we've taken is before it was so quiet and people who lived with a mental illness felt so isolated. And now we've started a lot of conversations like this the past several years. We've been talking a lot, especially in Jacksonville, about mental illness and engaging conversations about mental illness that people like Danielle are starting to say, okay, I want to educate myself. And I think that the best thing that a loved one can do is sit and listen. Like Janine said, no judgment. Sit and ask someone, how are you feeling? What are you struggling with? How can I help you? I always use the analogy, as Janine has, about other illnesses. If you found out a loved one had cancer, you wouldn't just send them to an oncologist and not provide support. You would go with them. You would ask them how it went. You would do research and find information to help them, find support groups for them. It should be the same for mental illness. And so fortunately, there's more people like Danielle who are out there and providing that level of support.
So I would assume that the power of being heard is very profound in the world of mental health illness, especially in that first few periods of time where someone is coming to terms with the possibility of having mental illness, dealing with the possible stigma associated with it, and the bravery to come out and seek help and have that discussion. I remember for myself, I was a psychology major in college, and I did a post-bac of deviance, and we did a lot of counseling to learn how to do that. And it was amazing. A lot of times you just repeat what the person said to them, and it seems like it just opens this door of it's okay to share, and it's amazing the power of that.
Absolutely. So when you're really present with somebody, really there listening to them, putting your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own experiences aside, and just being there present one-on-one with someone, that can be very powerful. The media, unfortunately, portrays mental illness as very scary. And we know that. That's not the true face of mental illness. That's a very tiny, tiny percentage of mental illness. And people, that's a very severe mental illness that's gone untreated for many years that the media tends to portray. But that's what we think of oftentimes, or people think of when they think of mental illness. And so it's scary to start talking about it. But when someone does start to talk about it and they're in front of someone who is just like, I get it. I love you. I want to be there with you. Let's talk about it. Tell me what you're feeling. And all of a sudden, it becomes less scary, less isolating. And again, being that comfort, that support, non-judgmental, open, wanting to listen can be really critical for people who are struggling.
So Dr. Delahunt, when you are meeting someone who has emerged out of the clouds of concern regarding reaching out for help, obviously if they're seeing you, they have made that decision, or someone in their family has helped them get to a point where they can ask for help, how do you as a psychiatrist navigate their concerns regarding the stigma and the fact that they are dealing with an issue that is actually a disease that needs to be addressed as such without worrying about what it means to be labeled as someone who has a possible mental illness?
Well, so first of all, let me step back for a sec. You had asked a question earlier in terms of how do people get help. And one of the things I forgot to even mention is the fact that there are suicide hotlines and there's text lines. There's even a text line, 741-741, that people can just text out, and they are educated counselors on the other end who will reach out to them and help them. As Ms. Hoff has done, she's created a support network for people who have identified themselves as likely having problems with depression. And it is kind of that peer-to-peer relationship that sort of takes kind of the stigma away. It makes people feel more comfortable talking to others who have either themselves experienced some form of mental illness or know of someone close to them, family member or close friend, who have suffered from mental illness, and everyone recognizes the need for support. Once they are in treatment with professionals and also seeking their own form of support through support groups or other activities, it is an amazing experience from a clinician standpoint to watch someone as they progress from being in a moment of crisis into a phase of doing extremely well and emerging from the pressures of their mental health problem. I really applaud Ms. Hoff and people like her who are strong advocates for mental health and mental wellness. I mean, we often describe it as mental illness, but really what we strive for as clinicians and former patients is for mental wellness. And Lord knows any of us can use some mental wellness in our life. The perseverance that someone can have to not only get past this, but to reach out, get help, and get the support through professionals as well as just family and friends, and then turn around and provide that same support for others is absolutely key.
So speaking of bravery, you know, and that's, I think, a common theme here is that when you feel like you may be dealing with a mental health issue, it's an incredibly brave step to take to reach out for help. So, Janine, you are doing something that's pretty profound, pretty brave, and it's actually called This Is My Brave. It's an event coming up in May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month, as well as a spectacular month for birthdays. So what is This Is My Brave?
I'm so excited for this. This Is My Brave is a show, and it's actually a national organization, a nonprofit as well. And what they did was they created a performance for individuals who live with mental illness to tell their stories before an audience, which empowers them. So what we're doing here in Jacksonville is we license the show, and we're auditioning individuals who live successfully with mental illness. And what we mean by successful is not that they're financially successful, but that they cope and they have coping mechanisms and they're not in crisis mode, and we're auditioning them to be a part of this show next Saturday, February 11th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the San Marco Library. And it's just a 5-minute story of your journey with mental illness. It could be an essay, a speech, a monologue, original song, original poem that tells your story, your journey. It's your truth, your reality. And then we're going to be presenting it Saturday, May 20th at Friday Musicale in Riverside at 7:30 p.m.
So it's amazing. It's an opportunity for people to tell their story, marrying an amazing field of collaboration between arts and medicine, which has been embraced for now. I mean, I was a resident when we had our arts and medicine program at the University of Florida just flourish. But it's a profound, profound avenue for being heard, to be able to share, and to be embraced for whatever the situation is. But here is using it to allow people to heal. It may be an opportunity for someone who's in the audience to see that it may be okay and that you're not alone at a time, again, that you may feel the most alone. And that's profound.
And it's that time again. Time for another break. Just hang tight. We have a lot more to
get to. We'll get that answer as soon as we come back.
Yes, we're going to get that answer. Hang tight. I see we have a caller on the line. Mike, we'll try to get you. We have one more segment here left on the conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV. And just like I said, we are right back with the conversation. We have a couple of minutes left in this segment, and I know we were just getting good, so I'm just going to toss it back over to you guys so we can just carry on our conversation.
So thank you for joining on the conversation. We're talking about mental health and amazing things with this organization called Where is the Sunshine, started by its amazing founder, Janine Hoff. Go to whereisthesunshine.com for all the amazing things on the website. It's a beautiful website with a lot of wonderful, wonderful things, including your TEDx talk. Denise, thank you very much for joining us. Denise Marzullo is the director of Mental Health America here in Northeast Florida and the amazing work you do. And Dr. Delahunt, always thank you for joining us and giving us a clinical insight of your work as a psychiatrist. So I want to thank all of you for joining us. Before we end, you were talking about arts and medicine, and you as a person with amazing background in music, and she's actually an opera singer, of bringing that together with your event with This Is My Brave. Auditions this upcoming Saturday to follow February 11th, 2017 from 1 to 4 p.m. at the library in San Marco. Bring your stories, bring your essays, original music, poetry. Go and try. The worst thing that can happen is that you have a wonderful time auditioning and supporting the arts and marrying the arts with medicine.
Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that the arts heal. I've lived a whole life of music and film and theater, and that's my background. And, you know, that's why we have so many celebrities coming out now talking about their story. Bruce Springsteen, Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez. They're sharing their story. They're sharing that they live with depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety. And I feel every day there's someone new sharing their story. We have Prince William and Prince Harry over in London sharing their story about after their mother passed away, and they're getting on the mental health, you know, bandwagon, so to speak, and they're getting people to share their stories as well. There's a real connection between the theater and music and all of that and mental health. And for me, it was really healing. That's actually why I named it Where is the Sunshine?
That's fantastic. Yeah. And again, be mindful, be brave, and don't be concerned about the stigma because, you know, we talk about 1 out of 5 Americans has a mental health illness. 1 out of 25 U.S. adults has a serious mental health illness. And 50% of cases of mental illness begin by the age of 14, 75 by the age of 24. And this is a thing that we need to pay attention to. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of mortality in the United States. And in teens and young adults, it is the second leading cause of death. So if you have any questions, any concerns, seek out help from friends, family, your primary care physician, psychologist, psychiatrist. And if you're in a deep place, 1-800-273-TALK is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and you can get help. So don't feel like there's a reason that you can't. And you know, be strong, be brave, but when you have a time where you feel like you may not be there, there is support out there, and there are people that can help guide you to a place where you're safe. One thing I want to talk about before we end the show, if anyone follows us on Facebook at The Conversation Jax, on Twitter at Conversation Jax, I'm an Iranian-American. I was actually supposed to be in Paris this week for a conference at where I did my fellowship at the Mansouri Institute, and I was supposed to be in the operating room on Wednesday in Paris, which I was very much looking forward to. However, with the recent immigration ban, some friends of mine who are lawyers and immigration lawyers told me to be mindful about international travel. Even though I was born in America, I'm a U.S. citizen, and the only passport I've ever had is American. However, with that concern, people are canceling international flights. People are concerned. Everyone can look in the media and see a lot of the alarming things that are going on. I love this country. I feel blessed to be here. I feel very honored that my parents worked hard to get here and give us the opportunities that we had. And I just wanted to share, you know, some statistics that I hope you take with you when you see things in the media that may call for ostracizing people from the Mideast and those countries. According to census data, there are almost 1/4 million to 1 million Iranian Americans in the United States, and they have profound impact in the positive way to most of the communities that they touch. One-fourth of Iranian Americans holds a master's degree or a doctorate degree, which is highest among the 67 ethnic groups that were studied. Surveys from Fortune 500 companies and other major companies show that more than 50 Iranian Americans hold leadership, senior leadership positions in companies that have net worth more than $200 million in asset value. And in fact, the founder of eBay is a French-born Iranian American. 43% of NASA scientists are Iranian. And in academia, more than 500 Iranian American professors are teaching and doing profound research at top-ranked universities in America: MIT, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, the University of Florida, to name a few. So when you look in the community and see things, some of these things can impact people that you know, people that positively impact your community. And if you look at some of the things that go on, Iranian Americans have not been involved in any terrorist activities here in the United States or anything of that nature. And keep those things in mind when you read things and you hear things, because the truth is not always what may seem, and the actions that go forth sometimes may have profound impact on people that had nothing to do with the question at hand, as we see here. So be kind to each other, be open-minded, and as we're talking about mental health, this is something that, again, not have anything to do with the immigration ban, but as we have this discussion today, all the work being done by the people in this room comes from love and caring about people in our community, and they use the stories that they have dealt with and the world that they live in to try to impact that change beyond themselves, and that's profound. And I hope we can take that forward to every aspect of what we do in dealing with people we care about, people in our community, and try to be arm in arm in a way that we make this world better and open and open-minded as opposed to the opposite.
And that's all the time we have today. Time sure does fly when you're having fun. Have a great weekend and join us again next week on The Conversation here on News 104.5 WOKV.